Radio Prague News.
Škoda Auto announces record car sales, inflation eases in February, and around 40 children and adults are injured in a bus accident. The country's biggest car maker, Škoda Auto, has announced its best ever February for worldwide sales. The manufacturer racked up total sales of 78,800 over the month, 3.6% more than in 2015. Sales in Western Europe and China were particularly strong. Škoda was also helped by the launch of new models of the top-of-the-range Superb and the downrange Fabia. The rate of year-on-year inflation slowed in February to 0.5% from January's 0.6%, according to figures released Wednesday by the Czech Statistical Office. One of the main factors for the slowdown were weaker price rises for alcohol and tobacco and more moderate cost increases for utilities and housing. Prices rose 0.1% month on month. The inflation figure is well below the target rate of the Czech National Bank of 2%. Sales of the flagship beer, Pilsner Urquell, rose by more than 8% overall last year compared with 2014, based on both sales on the domestic market and abroad. That means that a new record for overall sales, surpassing the 2 million hectolitres of 2014, will be set. The beer is one of the main trademarks of the Czech brewer Pilsenský Prastroj, which belongs to the Saab Miller Group. Around 40 people were injured on Wednesday morning when their bus overturned near the town of Louny, northwest of Prague. Emergency services from Prague and the whole of central Bohemia were called to the scene. The injured comprised at least 36 children and 4 adults, with police saying that casualties ranged from slight to very serious. The bus is believed to have skidded on ice on the busy road. Czech authorities say they've found discrepancies in the drawing of funds from the Stork's Nest Farm and Conference Centre of ANO leader and Minister of Finance Andrej Babiš, with fines of 6 million crowns at one stage imposed, according to the server Neovlivny, which reported on Wednesday. The circumstances of EU funds awarded for the project are now being investigated by EU anti-fraud authorities. Babiš and his massive agrochemical group have until now maintained that Czech authorities had no misgivings about the funding of the centre. They repeated that line again on Wednesday. And the Czech National Bank Wednesday took the exceptional step of banning the Russian bank active in the Czech Republic, ERB, from offering loans or accepting cash on accounts. Its remaining activity has been limited to so-called zero-risk areas. Most of the bank's operations regard financing of Czech business in Russia, but it also covers some basic banking services to the public with branches in Prague and Karlovy Vary. The first Czech branch was opened in 2009. I'm Chris Johnston, and that was the news.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, Czech politicians express solidarity with imprisoned Ukrainian pilot Nadia Shevchenko. We'll hear a report from the One World Festival of Human Rights documentaries underway in Prague. And later on in Marketplace, Chris Johnston will spotlight some of the problems of the Czech construction sector. All that coming up, so please stay with us. A number of Czech politicians have expressed support for Nadia Savchenko, a Ukrainian pilot on trial in Russia for allegedly helping to cause the deaths of 2 Russian journalists in 2014. Savchenko is currently on hunger strike and refusing to accept any verdict handed down by what she describes as a totalitarian regime and a petty tyrant dictator. Dominic Yoon reports.
This week, hundreds of prominent figures spanning more than 20 countries put their signatures to a Polish-initiated open letter to the Russian authorities calling for the, quote, immediate and unconditional release of Nadia Savchenko, a volunteer pilot who was serving in eastern Ukraine before being captured by pro-Russian separatists in June 2014. Among the signatories are Czech MEP Pavel Telička and former Czech ambassadors to Russia Petr Kolář and Luboš Dobrovský. Nadiyev Savchenko, 34, has reportedly been refusing both food and water since March the 3rd. Russian authorities claim that on June 17th she caused the deaths of two Russian state TV journalists, Anton Voloshin and Igor Korneliuk, during fighting near the Ukrainian town of Luhansk. But the defense insists the men were struck by artillery shelling hours after Savchenko was captured. She is also accused of illegally crossing the Russian border disguised as a refugee. In her final statement to the Donetsk-based court presiding over her trial since last summer, Savchenko, who since her imprisonment has also been elected an MP to the Ukrainian parliament, described her 20-month imprisonment as illegal. She also demanded to be returned home and called the trial a farce. If found guilty, Savchenko faces up to 23 years in prison. Political leaders from across the democratic world have been expressing solidarity with Savchenko. In a statement released on Tuesday, US Vice President Joe Biden described the soldier as, quote, proudly serving her country before she was unjustly imprisoned. A number of Czech politicians have also been taking up the case. Christian Democrat Deputy Prime Minister Pavel Bielobrádek announced Tuesday that he is to pen a personal letter to Russian leader Vladimir Putin calling for Savchenko's release.
I want to address President Putin via the Russian embassy and express our discontent over what appears to be taking place, namely the violation of human rights and also international law.
Also on Tuesday, opposition top 09 party leader Miroslav Kalousek sought to bring up the case of Nadia Savchenko in the Czech parliament, but was thwarted by a Communist Party procedural objection. In a later press briefing, Kalousek expressed fury at his communist colleagues.
We were unable to table a resolution today in parliament due to a veto by Putin's fifth column. The only thing we can do right now is call on our colleagues supporting this resolution to put their names to it anyway. We will then ask the chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee to direct this document to the Russian embassy. I'm convinced we'll have a majority.
Kalousek also described Savchenko as a soldier doing nothing more than defending her country on the soil of her country. Responding to claims of willful obstruction, Communist Party chairman Pavel Kolacek said his party did not want to partake in a knee-jerk reaction to an apparently, quote, media-fueled campaign.
Dominic Yoon with that report. Now, have a listen to this.
I escapato per cercare qualche vita. Non è possibile che debba mancare in quello.
The Belgian film No Man is an Island opened the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries in Prague earlier this week. The film maps the fates of two young migrants, one from Ghana, the other from Tunisia, who have been taken in by locals on the Italian island of Lampedusa, which for a long time was at the forefront of the migration crisis in Europe. Ian Willoughby discussed the theme of No Man is an Island and the limbo-like existence of its protagonists with director Tim de Kirschmacher.
For me, Lampedusa is a bit of a metaphor for Europe in the sense that you have people pro-refugees and you have people contra-refugees. And you could say that these two guys were lucky that they got adopted and been taken care of by these families. But what I wanted to show with the film is that it cannot stay with like a rooftop over their heads, food, work. There's a lot more needed to make this kind of thing work. And it's actually a plea for communication. At the end of the day, what these people really want or what these guys really want is that people talk to them as normal human beings, as just one of us.
Lampedusa has for a long time been, I guess, at the front line of the migration crisis before a lot of what we've seen in the last year or so. What are conditions like there in general?
That's also what media coverage did at a certain point. The perception of Lampedusa has always been that it is overflooded with migrants, but that's actually not the case. Lampedusa is a transit island, which means that boats used to arrive there because now they enter at sea, but they used to arrive there, and then these people get on a bus, they get to the detention center, and by law they should be transported within 24 hours to the mainland, and from there they are dispatched. So what you basically see in Lampedusa is not spectacular. You see boats arriving and you get a glimpse of it, but that's mainly it, and there are only like a couple of people, as I say, that are actually staying there or actually living there.
Frankly, before I saw your film, I expected Lampedusa would be like one big camp.
Yeah, and it is not one big camp. Now, because of the operation with Europe and the Italian state and Frontex, boats are entered at sea and they get immediately transported to Sicily, and from there they are dispatched to other camps in the whole of Italy. So at this point, Lampedusa is actually not that spectacular, I mean, or at least not what the media is trying to sell to the people. And therefore, I also wanted to show somehow that this is maybe the real deal, that this is maybe what is happening for real there.
As we speak, even EU leaders are meeting to discuss how to try to stem the incredible flow of migrants to Europe. Mm-hmm. I know it's a very big question. What do you see as any kind of way forward?
We should not try to talk about, or we should somehow try to leave the cold bureaucracy behind. Because whether you like it or not, people are going to move from A to B. And as long as like the Middle East is on fire, so to speak, and as long problems in Africa are not solved, it's going to happen again and again. So I think we should think more about what we are going to do with them here. We're democracies and we fought hard for that. So it's our duty. It's our duty to find a solution for it. And it, I don't think building walls on the border or pushback policies are solutions for that. Of course, I'm not naive. Like, what is happening in Syria is kind of a world war, but on a very small area. So it's really complicated. Nobody really knows well anymore what's going on there. And it's spreading. So I think it's up to the world leaders to really think about how our future will look like. But it's going to be mixed. You can't just say that the world is globalized on an economic level and then like just trying to close doors when it is about people. It doesn't work like that.
Film director Tim de Kirschmacher speaking there to Ian Willoughby. A reminder that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature, Marketplace, in which Chris Johnston looks at some of the problems of the Czech construction industry.
The Czech construction sector is a symbol of the country's economic resurgence, just as it was of the years of recession after the financial crisis of 2008. Last year, the sector expanded by 5.5% compared with 2014, and the number of new contracts climbed by 3.7%, with the number of building permits also up. So you'd think that many of the men in suits at the Czech Building Forum at the start of March would have been very cheerful. But the optimism within the sector is tempered by two factors. Economic growth this year, while still positive, will fall back from the heights of 2015. According to a survey by the company CEEC, growth in the construction sector this year and in 2017 will ease to 2.5%. And bosses appear increasingly angry that many domestic construction contracts are still bogged down in a legislative morass that seems to characterise the country whenever new roads, rail links or buildings need to go up. The government, though, is looking to keep up the momentum of public construction contracts, at least in terms of the funds earmarked for them. Czech Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka referred to some of the challenges ahead as he opened the forum.
We are continuing with legislative changes. When I spoke last year, I highlighted the task of approving a new law on public tenders and to amend the construction law. As regards the law on public tenders, this is close to the final third reading in the lower house, but the process has not been easy. There were thousands of proposed changes and a major debate in the government's legislative council. But I'm now convinced that we will successfully complete the legislative process and within the time frame that the government planned and expected.
Public tenders have been a legal battleground in the past in the Czech Republic, with numerous disputes about the ways tenders are designed and whether they've been tailor-made for certain companies, with the results often challenged. But many public contracts are also awarded without tenders, with the Czech Republic estimated to have one of the worst records in the EU for circumventing tenders. According to one study, in 2014, around 20% of contracts were designed in such a way that tenders could be avoided. One of the main aims of the new rules is to give those organising tenders more room to lay down the conditions and be less tied to the lowest price principle. But the types and conditions and circumstances for such rules have still to be clear and fair. But many have still to be convinced that this new formula will finally result in fair, open and efficient public tenders. It had been hoped that the first reading of the new bill on tenders would have been completed in the lower house last Friday. It didn't happen, with the whole issue getting tied up in the controversy surrounding conflicts of interest between businessmen who are also politicians. There are also some other problems facing the sector as well. Not least of those is the drawn-out planning permit system. At the forum, figures from the World Bank were given out that it takes on average 247 days to get a planning permit for a small building in the Czech Republic. That's just 2 days less than in Iraq. The total for Denmark is 64 days, for Ukraine 67, and for Sierra Leone 166. For something more complicated, the Czech building permit could take anything from 3 to 7 years, it was added. The Czech Republic came in at 127th out of the 189 countries surveyed. It's not surprising then that some in the Czech building trade reckon they are being strangled by red tape. This is one of those forum speakers, the general manager of the building company Ecospol, Evzen Korets, and he had this to say.
Skutečně rozhodující problém je legislativa v České republice, protože třístupňový proces povolování.
A decisive problem is the Czech legislative system. The process for getting an authorization for construction, the independent environmental impact assessment, independent land use assessment, building approval, and the possibility of challenges at all stages means that the whole building process is incredibly drawn out. So the construction of a fairly large complex of flats, and by that I mean more than 100, can take 3 to 7 years, and that is simply not acceptable. When I compare this to the time taken in Germany, where I used to live, the permit process is around a third of the time.
The Ministry of Regional Development did in fact come up with proposals for a revolutionary restructuring and simplification of the planning process, with the general target of coming up with as near as possible to a one-stop shop for planning permits. But the time envisaged to carry out such an ambitious change was around 7 years, and some of the powers of other ministries, such as transport and environment, as well as local planning offices, would have been eroded. The proposal was, as a result, pulled, with hopes of some reform now focused on more modest changes to the construction law. Minister for Regional Development, Karla Slechtová, added, though, that she's not had her last word on trying to get some changes to the planning process as regards local and regional planning officials employed by town, city and regional planning offices. She pointed out that for many projects, local councils were both investors and officials paid by them were taking decisions with regards to specific projects, which certainly raised conflict of interest questions.
I to, že já jsem byla požádána na to stáhnout, já to tak nenechám.
I have not given up my attempts to get changes, and from next year I want to have some powers regarding construction officials so that as part of the state administration, the Ministry of Regional Development will allocate financing for these officials outside the realms of city and regional finances. That means financing will come from the state, I will have responsibility for them, and above all, I can ensure that they are properly trained.
And some of our hopes of a more rapid and less complicated planning process should see the light in proposals to amend the existing construction law. That is now in the government's legislative council, but the target is to get it ready to become law by the end of the year, although a bumpy ride is predicted. Minister Slechtová and entrepreneur Korets single out one problem in the current planning process that they say needs urgently to be addressed, the ability of third parties to challenge planning decisions at any stage, although they may not have any direct or tangible connection to the project in question.
V současné době skutečně je možné, aby účastníkem řízení s právem se odvolat byl kdokoliv, kdo vytvoří.
At the moment, it is possible that a participant in the administrative process can appeal. Anybody can form some grouping of citizens of just three people at the other end of the republic, and they could block the permit process sometimes for many years. The idea that such people should prove some direct interest in the planning process is not some imported idea from the United States, but something that is common in the rest of Europe. It is not a limit on public rights, but a limitation to those who can demonstrate a real interest. This is one of the things that, if it does not happen, will mean that this deliberate blocking of the construction process will continue.
A cílené blokování těch stavebních řízení bude trvalé.
And in a somewhat ironical intervention on the lengthy Czech construction planning process, the European Commission has now got involved. It's angry that a massive backlog of Czech projects were approved using environmental assessments up to 15 to 20 years old in some cases, with some dating back before the Czech membership of the EU in 2004. Why there's such a big backlog of uncompleted projects has most outsiders scratching their heads in wonder. A new set of Czech Environmental Impact Assessments, or EIAs, were only introduced last year, with the Czechs among the last in the EU to get their act together. Environment Minister Richard Brabec is now trying to get an agreement with the European Commission on what projects can still go ahead with the environmental assessments and which might need entirely new ones. He explained the position.
We are in a situation when we have a lot of almost 100 of old project, infrastructure project, transportation project with old EIA before accession Czech Republic to EU. And now it's a strong pressure from the European Commission to, let's say, to make a renewal of this EIA. And the problem is that, of course, there is this could be a postponement in this very important investment for Czech Republic, and this is the point. So we are now in phase of negotiation, which take, let's say, maybe 5-6 months.
Brabec said that there could be an agreement that perhaps a fifth of those projects in question might go ahead with the old approvals or under a new fast-track procedure. In the meantime, preparatory work can still continue on some of the other developments, so that at least some of the delay might be caught up.
And that edition of Marketplace has brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. You'll find us online at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then please write to english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us today and goodbye.